mother and father at all. That's why he just developed his own stupidity of his own.
Pretty rough. Do you know who La Povera is? Have you ever heard of La Povera?
Got this goddamn story again.
Yeah, I definitely do.
Is that the very second time?
Roger, so you know La Povera is a French boy in the French countryside. And his mother was basically a lady of the night. And, you know, the French people have a really nice story about La Povera. He's the way he is because of what his mother was. And I think there's probably a little bit of that going on here.
Yeah, it's just, there's no understanding the stupid people like that.
Oh, no. You got an understanding, all right. You know. I know. But, you know, we kind of took oath when we got our license that we, you know, we wouldn't do things like that on, you know, frequencies that we're, you know, privileged to operate on. Which tells me, obviously, this guy's not, you know, doesn't even know where to even get a license.
Yeah,
it's probably not even, you know, he's probably the illiterate enough that can't even read to pass the test.
At any rate, like I was saying, you know, at some point during the deployment, and I'm not ashamed to admit it, I'll go ahead and admit it to you. And as far as, you know, being a couple, just to steak and ice cream. You don't fault me for that, do you?
Definitely not whatsoever. When calling their family instead of distributing to the troops, so. And then that's when I asked him.
Give me a funny deployment story you got, Lloyd. I'd love to hear it, because I know you were what, mechanized?
Mechanized when we had just finished the recon for it, and so it was probably about 10 o'clock when we got into mission for that day. So we were met up with a tank company, so they circled all their M1s, and so probably about 3 o'clock in the morning, they called us and told us that there was a white glob coming at the formation. So they got the order to fire. And so we went out there and did the recon to find out what it was. And a herd of camels had got away from their tender. So, and they shot every single one of them. And we called in the division mess hall and we cooked them and had good camel steaks that day.
Oh, yeah. I've had camel. I've had camel. It's really oily. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. But, you know, you just get to a point where you just can't do MRE anymore, you know.
Definitely not Do you recall the Wolf Burger too?
Wolf Burger? Is that what you said?
It was a colonel that actually made these Wolf Burger stands, so it was a way for soldiers to get free hamburgers and stuff like that, that he sent all that stuff over there, and like I said, it was just, you know, pretty much little cooking trailers that he had set up, and so the soldiers, you know, got what we call it, the Wolf Burgers.
No, I don't remember. I don't remember any Wolf Burgers. I just, you know, I don't know. Let me see if I can find it. See if I can remember a funny one. We had, yeah. So, first deployment, Thanksgiving. We were moving from Victory to Eudari. It ain't on there, not talking over me. Is he talking over me, Lloyd?
Loud, clear.
Shut up long enough for me to get the story out. But, we were moving from Victory to Eudari, Thanksgiving Day. And, oh, Lord, it took, I don't know how long it took to get across the desert. But we finally got to Eudari, get some decent chow hall. And I was so disappointed, Lord. I'd miss it home so bad. And then, you know, because we always had Thanksgiving up at Meemaw's, family's just everything to me. And I just remember getting to the chow hall at Eudari. And the line was, I don't know, literally a quarter of a mile long. I wouldn't let anybody in the chow hall because Hillary Clinton was coming. And he's holding everybody up. So, to, you know, so you go in there so she could be first in line with her entourage. And, I'm so mad. And then finally, when I got in there, I finally just left, came back 4 or 5 hours later. And one piece of cherry pie left. And I was going through the line to get my plate, and I spotted the cherry pie. And there's a doggone sniper got it from 3rd Infantry Division. He got the last piece of pie. I literally cried. I mean, I literally was in tears. All I wanted was that one piece of cherry pie, and I didn't get it. And to this day, I blame it on Hillary Clinton.
KO4NUE.
AA1RD, KO4NUE. Go ahead, Bob.
You're barely making it into the repeater over something that sounds like QRM. I was wondering if you could turn your power up to try to make it a little easier for you, because you're breaking up some.
I can. How's that any better?
Maybe so. Thank you, sir.
Any of that?
Yes, sir, I did. Like I said, it was pretty much just a house wheel. More than likely, he was either putting some, the idiot was putting some kind of tone on the line, or, but I definitely heard you, all of that, about the not getting. Real quick.
I didn't get any of that, but and didn't get any of it. So I've got some. Let's see if we can beat him at his own game. I believe it was AA1RD KO4NUE. You still in there, sir?
Time getting through it. KO4NUE.
Yeah, Roger that. So I've got 200 watts here. You want me to do a story time tonight on 200 watts, or you want me to stay where I am? Would you like to hear a story tonight?
KI4MCA, y'all going to, as long as he's here causing problems, y'all going to have to run the power. And I'll be monitoring KI4LCI.
Oh, KO4NUE, Alpha 1, Romeo Delta. If you think you can break over him, that would be great. I'd love to hear a story.
That standby. Give me just a second. Let me. KO4NUE. Can you hear me now, sir?
N4DME.
N4DME, KO4NUE. Can you hear me over this idiot?
Roger, roger. We having the same trouble over here, so if anybody can hear me, if I'm making it, they need to switch to reverse and see if anybody can triangulate him on reverse. And also time and date stamp it and record it.
Yeah, roger that. Well, I'm just gonna turn my power up and walk over him. I'm just gonna have a story time tonight because I know he can't walk over this.
He wants attention. I don't think he's got a call sign or anything. But we having the same trouble over here too. So, but I think that's all he wants is attention. N4DME, check me into the net if y'all still got it going. And Donald, AA4QS, we're both in and out tonight. Appreciate you calling it.
Hello, man. I said hello. And, like I said, if y'all over this way, give me a holler. And, matter of fact, you bring the old man, I'll buy you lunch. How about that?
Getting over this, but you do come through here and there. So if you want to try your story, that'd be fine. I'd love to hear it.
Which was a prisoner of war camp.
About every third word.
Okay. Well, activated and got sent to Camp Atterbury, Indiana. Prisoner of war camp for German soldiers during World War II, and that was our mobilization site. That's where we went for training. For about 4 or 5 days, and we got 13 of us got sent in the country 36 days before the rest of the company did. That was myself and the wire and cable platoon. They sent 2 C-5 Galaxies to Indianapolis Airport, loaded our equipment on those 2 C-5 Galaxies, and flew into country 30-something days before the rest of the company did. And we landed at the time it was Camp Wolf, which was in Kuwait somewhere. And hot, Lord have mercy, Bob, it was so hot. Be there for 4 weeks. You're going to set up the communication grid, and in 4 weeks we're going to send you back home. So when the planes landed on the tarmac and the tailgate dropped for the C-5 Galaxies to take our equipment off, that heat hit me. Me and the lieutenant, my lieutenant, was standing in the back of the ramp. And when that ramp dropped, that heat just, I mean, it hit you in the face. I mean, it was just raw, you know. Him, I said, ooh, LT. I said, I don't know if I can do this for 4 months. And I was right. 18 and a half months later, I came home. So, the story here is the word stop loss. Lloyd, you know what stop loss is, right?
I do. If they, Bob wants an idea of what you're talking about, just cook something in the stove, stand with your face in it, and open that oven door real quick, and that's what that heat wave, that heat blast is like.
This is Alpha Alpha 1 Romeo Delta. I can only imagine. God bless you both.
We went to, shortly after that, that's when we kind of had to split everything up, and we sent our equipment to all over Iraq, all over. And, I don't want to get into specifics, I guess, but a portion of us went to Baghdad International Airport. This was the fourth day after things kicked off. I think it was somewhere around there. And it was like, I don't know, I guess Armageddon. I don't know how to describe it, really. Two aircraft on the tarmac, and they were both burning. I mean, they were still burning. Two civilian aircraft. I think Saddam owned them. But it was just surreal, really. You know, you'd stand there and you'd look, and I just remember telling the LT, people from Campobello don't see things like this. People from, you know, Illinois or Montana, they see things like this. We just didn't know what to think. I mean, it just boggled your mind. You ever had that feeling, Lloyd?
Yeah, especially went through LSA Anaconda and pretty much places like that. Just saw all the big jets out there and the big aircraft hangars where the planes were destroyed, and then saw it many times over, the Iraqi vehicles that they used for the transport, and when the Maverick missiles hit them and they were on fire, and not trying to make it worse on any of our dreams or anything like that, but to hear the people inside the vehicle screaming and you can't do anything about it.
So about 8 weeks later, we just, I don't know, we had to go back to Kuwait, and, you know, I mean, we had to drive. I mean, it was, you know, it's a long road back into Kuwait. I mean, it took a couple of days, but, I just, you know, just miles and miles of nothing but dunes and sand and just big potholes. It's the biggest potholes You know the potholes. You know the potholes I'm talking about, right? I mean, it swallow a truck. You remember those?
KO4 PXP. You mean the Waddies, and also inadvertently the tank ditches that they had constructed out there, which would I've seen many vehicles run off into those too.
That. So anyway, we came back to Kuwait and I stayed there for a couple weeks and worked with 160th Signal Command setting up a satellite communications at Doha. So kind of enjoyed that for a little while. It just kind of got old. Couldn't get off post or anything. But I mean, it's a lot safer. But this comes a point where you just kind of wanted to. I gotta get out of here. I got a weapon. And you keeping me behind the gates. I mean, what's the deal? you know what I mean.
Remember going to Doha when we were picking up some equipment and stuff like that, and it's really horrible to see that pretty Persian Gulf out there, and you can't get in, you can't even go in it because they have the landmines, the water mines in there, and one day we thought the subs were, or some kind of aircraft, or some boats were coming in, because there was like two or three explosions out there in the water, and they mentioned that the dolphins were running into those mines and they were blowing up, and we were getting hit by the dolphins up on the on the base in there in Doha.
I never have anything to do with dolphins. I didn't see any ocean other than an ocean of sand. I do have a funny story though. We had Navy, they sent in, some kind of communication section to occupy one of the mayor's cells. And I met this Navy guy at the PX. They had a little makeshift shopette there. And, I looked on his uniform. He had a scuba diver's badge, on his above his name tape. And I was sitting there. He was looking at some sunflower seeds. And I said, "Hey, man," I said, "you Navy?" And he kind of looked at me, and he looked at everybody's badges, So I saw his scuba diver's emblem on his uniform. He said, "Don't you dare. Don't you dare even say it out loud." But I couldn't resist, I just said, "Man, what in the world is a scuba diver doing out here in the middle of the desert?" it got him upset a little bit.
Definitely funny. Yeah, on the very backside of the Doha in Kuwait, you could actually just look over the wall and you could see the Persian Gulf. Because that's where the desalinization plant was, to the left on Doha.
We stayed in the warehouse most of the time, working. I made so much Cat 5. I don't know how many cables I terminated. And then you got where you just kind of do it and you sleep, But we moved back out into the desert. We started off at Camp Pennsylvania. As a matter of fact, we set the grid up at Pennsylvania, New York, Victory, and Udari. It used every piece of equipment we had. We didn't have anything left. And then 5 months into it, we took a
around 600 miles of WF-16 and 200 miles of WD-1. And about 5 months into the deployment, we were having to pull used WD-1 off the ground, splicing it, soldering it, trying to get something to work with. So, I mean, it's no telling how much wire we ran, how much Cat 5 we terminated, and then, like I said, when we got out to the desert, we got our hands on, a couple hundred miles of these big rolls, I don't know where they got it, of fiber optic. So we got good at terminating fiber, and got really good at it, and learned so much.
Yeah, at least you didn't have to go out and pick all that wire back up, because there's no telling how much wire is still out there in that country.
Yeah, roger that. Well, another funny story. I remember one day, Third ID came back in from a mission, and they were set up on the other side of Pennsylvania. It was, it's about a 3/4 mile shot, and they wanted 7 phones. So we didn't have J-Box over there, so we just ran 7 lines of WF-16 over there. And we no more had them laid. You know, the DNVTs, they've got a little hole on the back of the phone where you run the WF-16 through it, and you tie a knot in it so that it's a strain relief. If somebody trips over the wire, it won't pull it out of the terminal. We no more had them run, Lloyd. I mean, we just finished and validated the phones. We were walking back to the tent, and here comes Third ID with about 26 Bradleys in the gate. And what do you think happened when they run over that WF-16?
My guess is you were chasing a couple of phones, or a bunch of phones.
Right, exactly. You know how tough that wire is, you know. It jerked them right out of the tent. You ever seen a DNVT hung up in a Bradley sprocket? I have. It's a nice little sound when it gets in there crunching up.
But they weren't too happy about the radios being messed up, though.
Well, hey, you know, you wanted it, we gave it to you. So, you know, I do remember the commander saying, he went out there just to fuss it. I signed for those phones. Who's going to pay for this? We just, we had so many of them, we didn't sweat it, but, it destroyed them, absolutely just pieces of it,
Much stuff buried out in that desert, it's not even funny, because I know in a lot of mechanics' toolboxes, there's stuff that was not authorized, and they just dug big holes and put them in the ground.
No, you're right. It's just, I don't know how much stuff we buried out there. Just most of it just junk. But, some of that stuff you just can't bring back. You don't know what, not exactly sure why we destroyed so much stuff, but I don't know. I guess just trying to get back or what. I mean, do what you gotta do. Comes a point where I hate to say it, but it's the truth. It is, you just don't care, I do remember, though, that being the second deployment was much worse than the first. It was really harsh. And, of course, I deployed as first sergeant on the last deployment. And that was, learned a lot about people. A lot about people. And, you know, being first sergeant, you got to be good at that. And, but it just consumed me. But, you know, I've seen good first sergeants, bad first sergeants. I know you have too. But, I just, second deployment, I spent 13 months, in country, I believe it was, and just let my radio drop. It's KO4 NUE. Second deployment was 3 years later. We went back to Eudari, and that was the original camp, one of the camps that we set up with communication. So go fast forward 3 years, and we go back, and I mean, just this sick feeling in your gut. I mean, just, you know, I can't believe I'm doing this again. Went to Eudari, stayed there for almost 30 days. And we got a mission. We had to cut the unit up. I had to cut the unit. Me and the commander cut the unit up into 10-man teams. And, I mean, we put them on a bus and send them to the helipad. Here, there's 210 rounds of ammunition. I'll see you in a year. And that was hard. That was really hard. You know, 10, 12 people at a time. Until we got down to the last 10 people. And that was me and the commander. And I had a bodyguard. He had a bodyguard. And we flew into where we were stationed. And it just kind of went downhill from there, I guess.
Yes, neither one of those were very easy missions on that. I've still got pictures. I keep them in a security jacket where I'm going to the Valley of Death where all the equipment was managed. That was definitely a horrible sight.
Yeah, so we got to Victory, Camp Victory. And that's where I spent the rest of the, well, that's where I was based out of. Once we took over, we took a building from the Iraqis. I mean, you didn't have a choice, you know. And you hate to say it this way, but it is what it is. If you want it, you take it. It's just the way it is, you know. No other way to look at it, really. So we just took it, and that was our you know, command building. And then the rest of the, I guess, 12 months, stayed there a month. I just wanted to get out and see the soldiers because they were scattered from all the way to Mosul. We had one FOB right up above Mosul called Erbil. And I spent the rest of the deployments on Chinooks, Blackhawks, C-130s, even spent some time on a Sherpa. You know, that's bad. That's really bad when you have to take a Sherpa to move.
Definitely true. I'm pretty much sure that there's not a grain of sand in Iraq that I did not step on.
Yeah, I get the point. I don't think that's possible, but I get you. I understand what you're saying. But so I would move from FOB to FOB, you know, making sure that they were cared for, making sure their needs were met, you know, just doing what a first sergeant's supposed to do.
But it wore me out, man. I ain't gonna lie to you. It just it wore me out. It really did. And just couldn't rest. And somebody's always shooting at you. Somebody's always trying to, you know, cause harm. And you just live in that environment for a while. It just, I don't know. It gets a little weird. But my whole point of all this was, it comes a point where, you know, first 6 or 8 months, you're just, you don't give a rat's tail. You just, you know. But the closer you get to home, you start getting to be a little bit more careful. And I swear, man, I mean, it just seemed like they knew who, you know, 151 was. And it just, closer we got home, I mean, the harder it got. It just, you see the light and you just can't get to it, or you got to work extra hard to get to it. That was rough. That last 90 days, feeling right.
Another funny story for you. Me and another mass sergeant that was with me, we were just outside LSA Anaconda, and we were setting up a secure area for a wagon wheel, and he had to use a latrine, so he sat there and pulled down his pants, and his posterior touched the sand, and immediately got chemical burn. So we're going, yep, this is definitely not a place to be. And so we went to the medic, and they asked me what was the problem. He had a chemical burn on his posterior, and they're going, the senior goes, well, I'm not looking at that.
Breed UE with KO4PXB. Yeah, so I'm just curious, not trying to be nosy, but are you you registered on the burn pit registry?
But I'll look it up here shortly and do that.
Did I hear you right? You said you were not on the burn pit registry. Is that correct?
Yeah, unfortunately, I hadn't heard of that actually till just maybe a couple of days ago, because it was never mentioned. It's pretty much the issue that I pretty much got still going on right now that they looked at before, is I just did still the frequent nosebleed every once in a while, but I'll definitely do that on the burn pit register.
So I'm gonna fuss at you a little bit. You get on that registry ASAP. Have you been to the VA yet since you've been home?
To the one in Farmer, because like I said, I work in Farmer all the time, so I go there for when I have issues with PTSD, and I get to that point that it's at the top of my head, so I go there and talk to them and calm down and get there.
Well, you need to get on the registry. It's some pretty bad stuff. You just get on the registry. Give me a call on landline sometime, and I'll let you know where to go and what to do. But just some things you need to know. But at any rate, so I spent most of the 14 months, whatever it was, on the second deployment. Just on aircraft, usually, you know. I mean, it just takes a horrible amount of time to move in country, you know. You go down to, and I got where I just quit flying on airplanes. I just, there's something about an airplane, I just couldn't do it. I just could not do it. I enjoyed the Blackhawks. I think probably because they didn't have so many people. They could get but 9 people in there. But I have a funny story. There was one Blackhawk that I knew the crew pretty well, and had a female door gunner. And she had a nickname on her armor plate, and that was, what? Ladybug. And she took her flight helmet to, I don't know, somewhere, and had the back of it cut out in a U-shape. So she looked like Darth Vader. You know, they got the black lenses that come over the face shield, you know. But she had about a 2-inch slot cut in the back of her helmet. And she'd get on that Blackhawk, and she's on the 240. And she'd pull her rubber band out of her hair. Kept a ponytail on the aircraft. And I guess, you know, the pilot, I mean, he didn't have an issue with it, I guess. But I flew with her because she was a door gunner. She didn't take no junk. I mean, she didn't take no crap off of nothing. If she saw something she didn't like, she would light it up. So, I marked the tail number, and every time, you know, I knew, you know, got on their schedule. And I finally got good at it. Schedule was, and I just go down to the helipad, and I think the trick was telling them how to dial out country, because we had a, on the phones, you've got a set of numbers. You remember the phones on the right hand side, you got a set of characters that are F-O, F, P, and R. You remember those letters?
Certainly do.
So F-O stands for flash override. F stands for flash. P stands for precedence. And R was retard, I think. Well, anyway, you know, nobody knew what the numbers, what those letters meant, you know, what they do. But if you picked up a handset on a DNVT and you hit flash override, that sent a tone to the switchboard that says, hey, I don't care how many trunks you got busy, whoever hit that button, somebody's getting dropped off a trunk and they're dialing home immediately. So, you know, you just pick up a hand dial and hit flash override, and boom, there you're an operator in Germany. How can I help you, sir? Where would you like to dial? You know, and they'd dial a number for you. So, I taught them, you know, flash override, and I had a special number that I put in for, you know, who I was. I think it's 567, a flash override 567. Oh, well, that's, you know, First Sergeant Hightower, he's in communications, just dropped a call, whatever. So, wherever they'd go, won't call home, they'd hit F-O 567 and they'd get home. So, there you go, the phone saved me again, and I got to fly with them. Didn't have to wait in line or anything, you know. But it's kind of interesting. But she did, boy. She didn't take no junk.
The two helicopters I rode over there were on the EA-47s, and that's only 2 times ever.
Well, listen, I'll tell you one more story, and then I'm gonna get on out of here. It's getting late, but you know, the heat over there it's just relentless, and you just can't get away from it. Comes a point where you kind of sort of a little bit get used to it, but so I was on a Chinook one time and fell asleep. You know, that old thing shakes you to death. I mean,
it just vibrates you to death in the air. And you look up into the cockpit, and I don't know what altitude we was at. We was flying. We'd been flying 30, 40 minutes. And the old thing's shaking so bad that the altimeter just shook out of the instrument panel. And it's dangling, you know. And the pilot, he keeps trying to poke it back up in there, you know. But at any rate, I fell asleep. And I'd been asleep for, I don't know, some time. And my right leg, right above my knee, was just burning. I mean, it was getting hot enough to wake me up. And I looked down, and it was solid red. Just solid red. And I thought, Lord, have mercy. I've been shot. And I poked the commander on the side, looking at my leg. And it's loud, you know, obviously can't hear anything either. So they had the crew chief back there, and I was pointing at my leg, hollering at my legs. You know, I thought I'd been shot. And he looks at my leg, and he looks up into the rotor housing. I mean, it's a good 10, 15 feet up in there. And one of the hydraulic pumps was leaking that old red hydraulic, call it cherry juice. But it's leaking hydraulic fluid right there on my leg. And I remember him hollering at me, if it ain't leaking, it ain't flying. And I just thought, I'll see how these aviators do this. I mean, gauges falling out, stuff leaking. And the guy in the back is sitting on the ramp, got his legs hanging, you know, we're at whatever altitude we're at. And he's just sitting there like it's a picnic, you know, legs hanging out the back.
Yeah, he was definitely strapped in on there. I got another funny story. We were riding in Humvee going up north, and the soda had actually rolled up underneath the radio mount in the doghouse, and it got hot enough where the can burst. And so it sounded like a bomb went off in that thing. So I asked who was hit, and I felt the warmth of the soda running down my side. It's me. And then I got relieved when I saw the can at the first open.
Man, I don't know how many old sodas I've seen bust from the heat, but you remember the Arabic Orange Fantas, written in Arabic, it's spelled Lulus, L-U-L-U. I love the Lulus, you know. Orange Fanta is my weakness.
Some of those, and it's definitely a true fact in Iraq, where you want it to be either extremely cold or extremely hot, because anywhere in between, the bug and the flies will just swarm you to the death, where it just makes it unbearable, and you truly want it to pour down rain, not just that little drizzle, because the sand and everything just comes like cement.
Roger that. All right, bud. Well, I've enjoyed it, and maybe we run the Blue Falcon off tonight. So, anyway, it's a pleasure talking to you, bud. And I probably need to get on the phone, catch up. Probably don't need to be talking about that stuff on the frequency, but at any rate, all right, bud. Appreciate it. 73's to you, and you tell the missus we said hello. Be safe, Lloyd. It's KO4 in UE. I'm clear frequency.
Please have a great evening and great time. And tell Anna I said hello. And we'll definitely get together another time. KO4 PXD.
Lloyd and Chad, Alpha Alpha 1 Romeo Delta, thank you so much for your service. And thank you for this story tonight. And God bless you and your families. Alpha Alpha 1 Romeo Delta clear.
For PXD, you're most welcome, sir. And thank you for thanking both of us, and maybe at any point in time that you see a veteran, we also thank them for their service.
73, Bob. Appreciate it, bud. KO4 NUE. I'm clear.